NASA 557, contact tower 128.15.
Caution, caution. Manual, fuel, manual, fuel.
I'm John Golia.
I'm Greg Fife.
And I'm Todd Curtis.
And we are the Flight Safety Detectives.
Between us, we have over a century of aviation accident investigation and safety experience to draw on as we discuss issues that affect all of us.
So we are qualified to share our perspectives on accidents and incidents and what can be learned from them for the future.
We're proud to say we've got three sponsors that really relate to the topic of aviation safety. The Professional Aviation Maintenance Association, or PAMA, Piston Power, and Avemco Insurance, a world-class provider of aviation insurance.
Later on in the show, we'll tell you how you can get a 5% discount on your insurance just for listening to the show.
We don't just dissect the official reports. In every episode, we identify safety issues and take the mystery out of accident investigations.
So maybe pilots and their planes can have safer flights ahead.
Well, hello, gentlemen. It is another episode of Flight Safety Detectives, and it's always good to be with you too. Our busy schedules and traveling and that kind of thing. I'm sorry that I haven't been able here to coach you and mentor you and chaperone you to keep you all out of trouble on these past shows. But it's always good to be with you. And we're going to talk about a couple things. The day we're recording this is day 10 after the Air India 171 crash. And John and Todd, you know, we've been discussing off air the fact that, you know, it's been 10 days. And the question is, why don't we have any information after 10 days, even leaked information? Because there's no investigative process anywhere in the world, including the United States, where information isn't dribbling out of the investigative process if it is known. Here, it's tight-lipped. And the concern I have, and John and I have heard that the flight data recorder from that aircraft is here in the United States. While that's good news that maybe we'll start to get some information about the aircraft itself and quell some of the speculation that has been running rampant for the last 10 days, I find it very curious that only the FDR, as we know it, is back here. Why is the CVR still in India? And that leads to a lot of things as an investigator that just don't make sense. And we both, or all of us, have been involved in investigations. We know that you want to read out the CVR and the FDR simultaneously, if you will, because we want to marry up the data. So if something's going on with the aircraft, the flight data recorder is only a recorder of artifact at a moment, time, and space of what is going on with the airplane. And John, as you've mentioned in the past, these recorders are recording well over 1,000 parameters. So we have these snapshots, but you got to marry those snapshots up to either radio communication between pilots and air traffic control, and or in this case with the CVR, communication between the two pilots to see what was transpiring from the time they pushed off the gate till the time they collided with that building. And I just find it kind of strange, gentlemen, that it's taken so long. And then one more thing I'll throw out, and both you and Todd can answer this, John, and that is they called for an inspection. The Indian government called for an inspection of Air India's Boeing 787s almost immediately after the accident. What were they inspecting? We didn't have any data. We don't have a pathway for this investigation yet. So what was it that they were supposed to inspect on the 787? And if it was some element of criticality that could have an adverse effect on safety of flight of a 787, why are they keeping it under cloak? You know, why isn't the rest of the world knowing about this, especially the operators of the other 1,100 airplanes that are flying around the world?
You know, well, the first thought that comes to my mind when they talk about they're sending teams of people out to look at airplanes. The 787 has a quick access recorder that downloads information nowhere near as robust as the voice recorder and the flight data recorder. But certain points in the flight will be recorded. And when that airplane lands at a given station, it's transmitted to a fixed transmitter like Wi-Fi, and it's downloaded. And I wonder if after the accident happened, if they finally went around to look at what has been going on with this airplane in the previous few days, as the passengers reported on that one flight with the video of everything going crazy in the cabin. Maybe they went back and looked at it in a more timely way than they normally do and found something troubling, because they said that they're sending teams of people, knowledgeable people, out to meet these 787s wherever they landed and check something. So
yeah,
they
it would be nice to know what that something is.
Right. And is it just unique to the Air India version, or is it something that's in every 787 and the whole world needs to start looking?
Well, that end, I thought to myself, well, Boeing is going to be a party in this investigation because it's a Boeing aircraft. But they're also beholden to the Indian authorities as the persons who will announce anything about the investigation. So I thought, what if Boeing knew something, but thought it was so serious they had to get it out? So I thought, well, let me look in one of my favorite places. Is there some sort of airworthiness directive that's out there? Coincidentally, and I say this because I don't know if this has anything to do with Air India, on the 16th of June, 4 days after the Air India accident, there was a notice of proposed rulemaking put out in the Federal Register that basically says for 787-8-9-10 to have a, let me get this right, requires repetitive general visual inspections of the area under all laboratory wash basins for evidence of intermittent active leaks at the faucet control module. And it goes further to say that there was suspicion that these leaks might go in under the floor into the electronics of the aircraft. Now, I don't know if this has anything to do with it, but I find it interesting that this airworthiness directive, which supersedes a previous airworthiness directive, just happened to come out 4 days after the accident. And I will have this available on the webpage for this episode for you to download and read yourself.
Yeah, and it's an interesting point, given the fact that, again, the rampant speculation that's all over the internet regarding dual engine, failure, electrical problems, given the fact that it is pretty well known now, or at least almost confirmed, that the ram air turbine had dropped. But what people keep harping on is the fact that they think it's a dual engine failure that would cause that rat to drop. And I posted on the internet that there are multiple ways to drop the rat with two good working engines. So again, we have to take things with an air of caution, because you can have two perfectly good running engines and still have a total electrical failure, a hydraulic failure in combination with that electrical failure, given the fact that the hydraulic pumps are electric. But if you drop the rat, then you've restored some level of electricity and some level of hydraulic pressure. So again, you have to look at it from a logic standpoint. But the bigger concern here is, why aren't they reading both of these? Why did it take so long? And again, here's the other curious thing. There were a lot of pictures of the wreckage at the accident site. And, if you read some of the news articles and saw some of the pictures or watched some of the video, the, quote, investigators that actually were there on scene the day of the accident and probably a day or two after, of course, they were all Indian government officials. We've got a team from the UK. We have a team from the United States. There is no picture of any investigators doing any investigation at the accident site. And oh, by the way, they cleaned up that accident site short order. And my concern, and I've posted this on Facebook, is if you don't have physical evidence to examine and document, then how can you substantiate if you've lost data on the flight data recorder or confirm? Because we have seen anomalies on flight data recorders where the flight data recorder said, the flaps are down, yet the physical evidence shows the flaps are up, and you create those anomalies. So you can't take things at face value. We know we've had data drops. We know we have sync problems. We know that we've had total failure of either the FDR and or the CVR. You need that corroborating evidence. But, you know, they've scraped it all up, cleaned it all up. I mean, and from my understanding, just looking at the pictures and people that I know, none of the investigative teams have been out there. And in an accident like this, where you're creating groups in a major investigation, and we've done shows about how big airplane accidents are investigated with the team concept, operation systems, structures, power plants, things like that, where we have some critical issues that need to be not only examined, but really developed to see if there is a problem. I don't see any of that activity taking place. And that's a real concern, Todd, you know, with regard to the fact that we have a lot of subject matter experts out there, but they really, from what I can tell right now, they haven't been able to document and do what they need to do to substantiate whether or not there was a mechanical malfunction or failure with that aircraft.
Now, take us through for a minute the flight data recorder analysis process. Obviously, it's being done in the U.S. It's an Indian accident. They're running the investigation. Would the team typically consist of someone from that airline or that government that is running the investigation in Washington overseeing or helping to oversee this? Or is this going to be all U.S. people?
No, it would have Indian government officials there actually running. Now, they need the NTSB folks to actually do the work. But again, we here in the United States, and there was some chatter on the internet about, you know, somebody was trying to school other people about Annex 13 and the fact that, you know, well, the, you know, it would be a violation to release data and everything else. First off, just for edification, ICAO Annex 13, that's the International Civil Aviation Organization. There was a treaty involving member states. Annex 13 basically is standards and practices, recommended standards and practices on how member states, i.e. countries who sign on, will conduct accident investigation. However, that is not universal. And however, it has no force of law. It is not enforceable. It is just recommended standards. Here in the United States, we filed numerous exceptions to some of the protocols outlined in Annex 13, one being the release of information because we have this thing called freedom of information. We are transparent. We release information on a regular basis, as has been seen in the previous investigations that the board has been conducting over the last 6 months. So it is not under ICAO Annex 13 that the information is being withheld. That's up to each country, and each country does not work the same way. Some actually will withhold that information secretively, kind of like our military does, where they don't release the information until they're basically done with the investigation. So but if there is a safety critical issue in civilian aviation, this is not the time to be withholding information. You don't wait 18 or 24 months. That's the whole purpose of doing an acts investigation, is to develop all the facts, conditions, and circumstances in a very efficient, timely way. Because if there is something safety critical, John, that information needs to get out and corrective actions need to be implemented.
Now, based on your past experiences with these investigations, let me ask you a couple of questions. First, in the Indian media, before the flight data recorder came over to the States, there was talk of, yes, we should have a neutral country analyze this data. First things that came to mind is, okay, Canada, France, Australia, all three have robust investigative capabilities. They don't have as much in this accident. I don't believe there are many citizens from those three countries. And anything they come up with would be seen as, okay, they're neutral, they're legitimate, and two of them are Commonwealth countries, like India is. That might be more politically palatable. Yet it went to the United States. What problems do you think this will have going forward, especially if the public perception in India that the U.S., which has a dog in this fight because it's their aircraft, is actually analyzing the critical data?
John, why don't you address that with Egypt Air? Because we ran into that issue with Egypt Air off the coast of New York.
You sure did. So when we did the recorders off Egypt Air, which were damaged, but nowhere near as damaged as what we have in this case, the Egyptians didn't like the outcome. And they came back and tried to take control of the box after they'd already given up control of the box. So it turned into quite a Donnybrook, and the Egyptians never agreed with what's on the box. And their report ignored everything from the box. And the voice recorder as well.
Because it wasn't favorable in their best interest, if you will, to their flight crew and the indictment of the intent or purpose that the first officer on that particular flight had in taking the aircraft down.
Right.
They wanted to believe it was an aircraft problem and not a pilot problem. And, you know, that's always a concern. But when you have officials from the United Kingdom, the UK, as a technical party to this investigation, I would expect that they would have a representative. Of course, we're going to have not only NTSB, but FAA, because they are responsible for continued airworthiness of that entire aircraft. So they'll be represented. And of course, you'll have the Indian government. So there is a natural system of checks and balances. Plus, we've talked about this before, and maybe we need to do another show to reiterate some of the details. When you're reading out the data, everybody has to be in agreement that that is the data. You know, you marry it up or you sync it up to make sure that the downloads, and since Boeing is there, if they need additional subject matter expertise, they go to the manufacturer of the FDR and or CVR to ensure that that is the most reliable, high quality data coming off that particular box. So there is a natural system of checks and balances. Everybody agrees that that is the information. The same with the cockpit voice recorder. If the cockpit voice recorder is downloaded and yet the two pilots start talking in their native language and there needs to be some interpretation, that always presents issues because, as we always say, there's always something lost in the interpretation. What was the spirit? What was the intent? Because in English, it may mean one thing. In some other country with some other language, it may mean something else.
And Egypt, so, there was a phrase said by the flying pilot. I think it was something on the order of, "I believe in God," shortly before the crash happened. There was some back and forth as to the interpretation of that as well, if I recall.
Correct. Either they're praying for help or they're doing it on behalf of a higher power. There's always that kind of thing. But there is a natural system of checks and balances. Now, how people want to apply it, I mean, we saw that with the MAX accidents. And the fact of the matter is that if it's not favorable or it could be costly to a government or an airline, they're going to try and spin it, you know, one direction or other. Here in the United States, our airlines have basically been on the wrong end of the wrath of the NTSB. Early on in the early days, 60s, 70s, even early 80s, where they may not have been fully forthcoming or whatever, and the board has pegged them on it and basically, you know, scolded them or kicked them off as a party to the investigation. And the last thing that anybody wants is to be disavowed from an investigation. Why? Because that is instant access to safety critical information. You don't want to be on the outside looking in if you had the ability to be on the inside.
We're going to take a short break now to meet one of Avemco's employees from their Frederick, Maryland office.
What's the most challenging calls that you have?
The most challenging calls that we can get here are senior pilots that aren't qualified, that haven't flown 25 hours or more in the last 12 months. And they don't meet our underwriting guidelines. And so those can be very challenging because you feel for them, but at the same time, you have to abide by our guideline.
And so are they always trying to, you know, finesse you and go, "Well, but I will," or "I did," or, I mean, what do you require for them to prove that they've either flown those 25 hours or will fly those 25 hours for your underwriting?
Well, they tell us, you know, we take their word of mouth, so they tell us we're going to trust them, we're going to believe them. You know, they're going to have valid medicals, at least 25 hours. And then there's some that don't have it. They go get it. They call back.
What about the funniest phone call you've ever had where you just started laughing because the information that you got is like, there's just no way I can do anything for this person?
Well, I had a guy that called in one time, and we have basic questions that we ask. If you had any accidents, if you had any incidents or claims, DUIs, arrests. And when I asked that question, he said, well, yes, I used my plane to smuggle cocaine back in 1988. And it got real quiet. You could hear a pin drop. And I said, are you serious? And he said, no, I'm just messing with you. It's freaking.
So, Judd, to write him?
I think we quoted him, but if we were too high, I can't bring them to the place. That was a few years ago.
Yeah, well, carrying that kind of cargo, I can imagine the premium was real high.
He caught me off guard. I was like, some people are brutally honest, and some people just like to pull your list. So, yeah, at the end of the day, it was fun.
Can they still get insurance if they have a minor landing accident?
Yes, they certainly can. As long as it's outside 36 months, we'll take a look at everything. And
do you require them to demonstrate that they've either had recurrent training after their incident or accident? Is there any criteria? You know, because a lot of times, you know, if the FAA doesn't require a 709 ride, just a refresher or check ride, do you all require that before you'll underwrite somebody that had an incident or an accident?
We don't require it, but there's some people that do it, you know, and they'll call back and they're like, hey, I got 20 hours of dual, you know, I'm ready to go, and we'll re-underwrite it and we'll offer coverage because that is a great thing to say.
Great. How long have you been here, Justin?
About 5 years.
And what's the best part of your job?
The best part of the job is being able to travel, to go to air shows like Oshkosh, Sun and Fun, being able to meet our customers, you know, face-to-face, give them free things. You know, I'm always taking money from them. It's nice to be able to get them
Well, that's
another free little good.
Yeah, there's a good tagline. When was the last time your insurance company gave you something other than a bill?
Yeah. So we try to do things, but it's fun to do that.
You got a hat.
It's fun to go to those shows because you get to meet the customers, and when you meet them face to face, it's just like you've known them for a long time, and then you establish those connections over years, and they call back and, hey, I remember you.
And now, back to the flight safety detectives.
Last follow-up question about the flight data recorder in the United States. How much can the NTSB and the U.S. government release about that analysis? Can they say, hey, all the data is good? Are they going to say absolutely nothing? Or are they going to say something that will sort of protect them against the kind of blowback that happened before?
Can't say anything because it's controlled by the Indian government. So they have to keep their mouth shut. Now, they can try to coerce the Indian government to release some data along the lines of what Greg was saying, maintaining airworthiness or safety protocols that may be discovered on the recorder that the whole industry could benefit from. So they could try to coerce them into doing it. But if the government of the country that's controlling the accident takes a hard no talk, no sharing information, there's nothing the parties can do except sit there and wait until the end and then release their version of the accident, which the NTSB does pretty regularly in some areas of the world.
Yeah, and I went through that when I did Silk Air, the 737 that was intentionally crashed from 35,000 feet, where we had a multinational, multi-country participation in the investigation of that accident conducted by the Indonesians. We were all in agreement 18 months later, before we disbanded and we were waiting for the Indonesians to write their report. We then, as the participating countries, because I was the United States accredited rep with our team, we get the draft and we read it, and it was totally, totally different than what we had all agreed on when we were together in the final meeting before we disbanded. And that's why we, as the NTSB in the United States, ended up filing a 50-page rebuttal to the Indonesians' report because factually it was incorrect. And they put that on the airplane, and it wasn't an airplane problem. We clearly demonstrated that. So, you know, these are the kinds of things that can happen. Politics gets involved in a lot of these accidents well outside the United States. More often than not, there's always some sort of influence. And Todd, you brought up a good point. If you have a very wealthy airline owner, are they trying to manipulate the outcome of the investigations? We know there's corruption and everything else. I've seen it firsthand when I was in Indonesia. The fact is that there is no place for any kind of politics or coercion in aviation safety, especially when it comes to accidents and incidents and the loss of life.
And a very quick recap of the history of Air India. It started as a privately owned airline. It was nationalized by the Indian government. And a few years ago, I think on the order of 2 or 3 years ago, that original conglomerate took over the airline again. So it's now in private hands. And the group that runs the airline is rather prominent conglomerate within India.
And, you know, you got a lot of money at stake here. Even though they put limits, different limits outside the United States on the loss of life, the fact is this type of accident is going to cost somebody a lot of money, because not only did you kill everybody on board except that one person, they're all entitled to some sort of a payment, but you've got numerous casualties and you have structure destruction. you know, you're going to have to rebuild part of the city because this airplane crashed in a populated area. So, I mean, there are a lot of things, you know, that we could talk about and continue on. And not only this show, we could probably talk about it for the next week. But we've got to wait and hopefully get some at least decent factual information coming off that flight data recorder so that there is a pathway. There is a direction for this investigation. And really put out, you know, some of the fires that are on the internet about whether or not we had a dual engine failure, electrical failure, hydraulic failure, all the above, or is this an operations related accident solely, you know, sitting in the cockpit and them trying to salvage a bad situation. So, again, we still have a few more days to probably wait before we get any kind of fact. But it is painful to watch, you know, all the speculation. We've always tried to do this on this show, and I do it on my Facebook post, is, look, I just want people thinking about the I brought up the fact that where is the international relief pilot, or the third pilot that's supposed to be in the cockpit? Because as I understand it, Air India supplements their flight crew on flights beyond 8 hours. Well, this particular flight is scheduled for 9 hours, 40 minutes. So where was that other pilot? Could the other pilot, if there was another pilot sitting in the cockpit, could they have done something nefarious? I can come up with 1,000 different storylines, but.
Greg, we know there was 12 crew members on the airplane. They didn't specify, just they said a crew of 12. All right. The requirement is not 12. The requirement was two pilots and six flight attendants. And why did we have four extra? Well, in reading some of the rules from India itself, there should have been two pilots, additional pilots on that airplane. Yeah. Now, did they give an exemption to have one? But in any event, that's two more people. That comes up to 10. They also have relief flight attendants on the airplane.
Yes.
All right, so the rules are a little bit looser for the flight attendants. The pilots are 8 hours. The flight attendants can go longer than eight, but the airline themselves has chosen to have some relief for the flight attendants if they're servicing large groups of people. So you account for the 12 bodies on the airplane as crew members.
And for those of us that are sitting here, like on this show, we're coming up with all these questions, yet nobody on the internet's talking about that, because we're looking at the broad spectrum, questioning things that are out of the ordinary. That's what investigators do versus, you know, a line pilot or somebody who thinks they're an expert now because they fly Microsoft Simulator with a 787 and they've put a whole storyline together. You know, yes, we all have to wait for the facts to really determine the direction of this investigation. But these are the curious questions that lead to speculation, that lead to conspiracy theories, that lead to a variety of different things. But we are speaking as fact. There's 12 people. Do they really need to have 12 crew members on that airplane? From our experience and the regulations, no. So the question is why? And things like that. Those are investigator questions. Those need, answers for the investigators to be satisfied whether or not that, you know, was there something going on? Should there have been? What don't we know? Things like that. So we'll be.
Oh, I want to go back to one thing what Todd said with the AD before we hang up.
Yeah.
Because the average person is going to say, you know, the toilet's leaking. What's the big deal? I'm sure anybody that's flown has noticed that the fluid that when you flush the toilet is blue. That's a chemical that's put in there to kill the germs, essentially, that's in the water. But it also is very conductive to electricity.
Yep.
I have been involved in more than one incident that didn't lead to a crash, but more than one incident where water and blue water have gotten down into the electronics compartment of an airplane and caused all sorts of electrical problems, including a fire. So that little piece of detail in that AD note that came out again may have bigger significance than it looks like.
Yeah. And that blue water is corrosive as well. So, I mean, water in any shape. I mean, and John, you worked on these airplanes. You know, everybody was always concerned with the front end of the airplane and the galley. Why? Because you spilled coffee, juice, you know, milk, water, everything else. And it happens to be co-located with a toilet. So you get a lot of bad stuff running down through the floorboards and into the E&E bay and stuff, which typically resides in the front end of the airplane.
Yes. So proximity to the leakage is important. Coffee. I've had more than one component, black box component, contaminated because of coffee, which conducts electricity as well.
Yep.
You add up all these pieces together, and that's why the investigators have to take everything in a holistic approach.
Yep.
Not single points. And I say that often with the when people come to me on TWA 800, and they'll say, "Oh, this company here or this group of people, they." Laid out a scenario that it was this was the cause, or the missile was the cause. I tell people, in that particular accident, there's over 50,000 pages of facts in testing.
Yeah.
If you take 5,000 of it selectively, you can move the probable cause wherever you want it.
That's right.
You have to take everything as a whole and let it lead you to a conclusion.
Absolutely. Now,
so many of these so-called experts that are on there have a very narrow view. They just take the pieces that support whatever theory they have.
Of course, because it's clicks. It's money. And with that, John, I will leave you with our last word.
And in all flying, please follow the basics. Plan your flight before you get to the airport. Redo it at the airport. Make sure that it still agrees. When you go out to the airplane, do a good pre-flight. I still see pre-flights that leave a lot to be desired. And after you get in the air, put that head on a swivel, especially if you're going to fly in and around Oshkosh. You know, we didn't talk about the surrounding airports also being overrun with airplanes because they just totally saturate Oshkosh, and there's thousands of others that are around the airport for 50 miles in every direction.
Yep.
So you've got to have your head on a swivel. It's all VFR flying, and you've got to pay attention around you because over the tree line, somebody may have just taken off. And, you know, you don't want to just rely upon them seeing you. You want to make sure you see them. So put that head on a swivel and pay attention. And please, please fly safely.
Thank you so much for listening to the show. We really value all of our listeners and subscribers. Our podcast gets ranked by you. So if you like this, give us 5 stars inside your podcast platform.
We want to keep the conversation going with you. So we'd love for you to engage with us on our social media channels. We're on Instagram, X, Facebook, LinkedIn, and of course, YouTube.
You can email the show at flightsafetodetectives@gmail.com. By the way, if you're watching this on YouTube, we're working on growing this channel, and it really helps if you all comment. So please do that. We read them all.
And be sure to subscribe.
Without the right insurance, you're Sierra Oscar Lima. Vemco Insurance Company is the only direct writer in the market, never uses third-party agents or brokers. Instead, They connect you directly with real underwriters with real answers in their Frederick, Maryland office, ready to solve problems and approve coverage based on your flying. Floats to wheels and back to floats. Avemco gives you more flexibility. Call 888-879-0389 for a free quote or visit avemco.com/flightsafety today. Don't forget to tell them the Flight Safety Detective sent you for 5% off your premium.